This was today in the dynamic during dancing. I was in Pune again. Buddha Hall, marble floor, the first sun, the morning birds, fresh Indian air, sun falling through the trees, and all around me people from all over the world. And Osho, his energy all over the place. And my heart opened and tears were falling. So much, no time, no space in the heart. So much love now. Thank you, Osho, thank you, Swaha. I bow down to the feet of the Master. Buddham Sharanam Gacchami. You are happily melting into nowhere, disciple. Yasmin. The taste of now, the taste of the eternal is the same. So this was the taste you had then, with Osho. That's your mind went back there, your memories went back there, no? Because something very precious. But now it's happening. And now you are more conscious. You can receive it more, the gift. Huh? The gift is always available, but we cannot receive it. We have to be very receptive. Now you have created more space in you, know, more understanding, so you can receive the gift, no? The taste of the eternal is always the same. And whenever you fall into it, you are always happy, you are always grateful, you are always surrendering to that, no? That is just a sign that it has touched you, you know? Everything becomes so easy. Cold? No? No. And you, mister, you don't have your hat even, you like this one. Immune now for cold, no? Ah. Just showing off, huh? That's okay. You know, one time I said that when it's cold for some people, then you should have a hot water bottle, you know, under the shawl. Then it's no problem. I don't know why still, Jaitang was going to make this heating in the floor, but I'm still waiting. That's the story of my life, waiting for you guys. What to do? And in the meantime, you have to freeze. Beloved Babaji, I've been trying to write you this letter for some time now, but every new day brings a new letter as I go on connecting deeper with my heart. I'm tired, Babaji, so tired of having my heart closed. That's good. That's good, Asad. You see that. You are tired now. You have to feel this tiredness. Not try to keep it together anymore. Allow yourself to fall apart. And no need to go on thinking or write letters either, because it's getting deeper every day. So then better to wait. Go deeper, go deeper, go deeper, go still deeper. Go so deep that all questions, all letters disappear. Otherwise, you can go on writing. But the tiredness is good. The moments when I'm completely at your service are the ones I feel more total. And then I feel I'm where I'm supposed to be. When you feel completely at my service, that means that you are completely there, no? Otherwise, you have so many projects all the time going here and there in your mind. Then how much available can you be? And it's not a question of doing anything for me, because I don't need anything. It's the question of feeling this completeness at your service, this surrender, this openness. And that you can have anywhere. But then you have to be dedicated to that instead of being dedicated to all these other dreams you have, all these fantasies, which we forget again and again and again, till you come back into yourself, which is now you get reminded. Then it's so good. You remember what is important in your life. You cannot remember that when you're remembering all the nonsense. It's impossible. That's why the master's work is to emptying you. In a way, it's a negative work, because I have to empty you so you can realize what you already have. It's nothing to get. Only the ego wants to get something. So allow yourself to empty. Empty, 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 and emptying. Empty everything. And then you realize that that emptiness brings you clarity. It brings you bliss itself. It brings you silence. Look now, if you write every day, it's just getting a mess. Then once in a while, I have to go through it to try to sort you out. It's difficult enough to sort out your letters, what to say about you. I left satsang today with a deep pain in my heart, feeling how close it has been all these years. Yeah, that's why we are always running around being busy, because we don't want to feel, no? Feeling is the first step. Normally you just think. When you think, you can survive your whole life without feeling. That's why people are afraid of going into their feelings. But you only become human when you start knowing your feelings, your deeper emotions, your sensitivity, your vulnerability. That's part of the homework. Then deeper than the feelings are deeper emotions, unconscious. Then all that has to be felt. When you are clean of all your mind and all your feelings and all your thinking and all your emotions, and your life is harmonious, then only can you enter into the temple of silence, of meditation, of being. So this is a price everybody has to. That's why I have all these things, because I know it's absolutely needed. Many places people just come and they sit. They're sitting for years on all their stuff. They have nowhere to empty out. Instead of emptying out, maybe they learn some new things, some new mantras. Nice mantras on top of the garbage pile. You have to first empty out the garbage pile, and all this stinky stuff, that is the work. To make space for the flowers. You have to get all the weeds out. Otherwise, even if it's some flowers there, they don't survive because there's so many weeds, they take over. That you can only do by realizing, I'm tired, I'm exhausted, I'm in pain, enough is enough. Then if this understanding is there, then it goes quick. If you don't fall back again. It's easy to get lost, and it's easy to have a shallow sexual connections, but the moment it goes deeper into the heart, I can't deal with it. And I'm so tired of this. No, because you haven't really dealt with your heart. Then how can you deal with it? That's why it's so important to know your own self, to know your heart. Otherwise it can never, how can you open up to somebody else? And people are afraid of love. People are afraid of intimacy because they don't know who they are. So then they become very shallow. Then there is very safe to have shallow sexual connections. For sex to happen, you don't need any love. You don't need any intimacy. That's why that is so. People have a very hard time now to stay together because they are very shallow. And love, it takes time to grow. It's a fragile flower. It takes trust. It takes understanding. But love is almost forgotten. What people think is love is sex. They have forgotten love. Sex without love is just ugly. But if you have love, then sex is beautiful. It's like that. So, the moment it goes deeper into the heart, I can't deal with it, and I'm so tired of this. Yes. That's what I'm trying to show you. Whatever is painful for you, I have to show you. And unconsciously, you always want to run away. You don't want to deal with it. You want to fall asleep. You want to escape. But the only way is to know thyself. There's no way around it. If this is not understood in your being, then you will always try to hide. But if you, that's why I said, when you come to that place, I'm tired. I'm tired of all my games. I had enough. That means you start seeing. You start having a distance to your games. Then you can start transforming. Otherwise, people sit and, everything is fine. Things are only fine when they are fine. And when there is fine, there is no pain. There is no shallowness. Because only in the depth, everything is fine. Also, when you read Rishi's letter this last week, I felt the deepest trust in you I ever felt. So much gratitude for all the love you have been giving to this fool. Love, Asad. Yes, my dear fool. What can I say? I'm just happy that fools start seeing that they are fools. Because when fools think they are wise, then it's nothing to do. Then I really have to wait. And I have so many fools that think that they are wise. So when one of the fools starts seeing they are fools, then great. Only then something is possible. Because no, this fool sees his fool. You have to start where you are. But the fool likes to think about enlightenment and spiritual things and deep meditation. But that is like watching the TV. And if the fool really sees he's a fool, then very quick he can get out of it. Because now, to see something means that now there is a distance. You can start observing yourself. If you are totally identified, you can never see that you are a fool. And that makes it very difficult for me to point anything out to you, because you always protect it. That fool who always wants to be so wise is very protected, very arrogant in his foolishness. Then whatever I say hurts the ego, the fool's ego, who thinks he is a wise man. That's why I'm very happy when fools seeing they are fools. Very good. No, you can start now. Otherwise, I always, and only in small doses, I can start. Otherwise, I will just blow your fuses. The deeper you go, and you say that when I read that letter from Rishi, it was the deepest trust in you I ever felt, because something got touched in you. Otherwise, the trust is always there. The love is always there. But that is also painful to see. Do you think it was something that changed in me in that moment? In some mysterious ways, and that's what's happening in satsang, I'm here to remind you of something else, of a deep trust you have in you. But you are so full of yourself, you cannot feel it. Then when you feel it, wow! That is a light in the darkness. And that will give you also trust, because now you know it's there. Somewhere in you, you feel this deepest trust. As I ever felt. So let that be a new way. And you see, my dear fool, even fools can feel this trust. Why should I be wise? The trust is what is important. The love is what is important. The no mind is what is important. Then you write another. Throughout my life, I have always felt a hole in my heart. I've been so dependent and needy, trying to fulfill it in the wrong places, trying to find reasons in my childhood, blaming my mother and my father in therapy. But this is everybody's story at one point. The ignorant person is always going in the wrong places, because the wrong places is very easy to go. You don't need any awareness to go to the wrong places. Then you are seeking to fulfill your needs in the wrong places. That's how most of humanity live. You have different needs, no? Depending on where you are in yourself, those needs become important. For a hungry poor man, food is the most important. Shelter is most important. He can never go into meditation. He needs food for the physical body. That's the first. Then you have all that. Then sex. No, so many people are obsessed with that, because it's shallow. But it gives you a taste of something. Sex is the first and can give you a taste of something that is beyond the mind. In orgasm, you can go beyond the mind. You have a taste of no mind, where you are no more. But this is not understood. That is the first taste of where you can be. You have a place in you that is beyond. And that is what, in consciousness, conscious meditation, you come into that place. That's what people are longing for. But unconsciousness, they are just wasting their energy. today in the breathing session, it shined a new light. It connected many feelings I've been having since I became your sannyasin. Yes. And I remember you said you wanted to run away from some of the processes because you don't want to feel. Then you come up with excuses, and then maybe you can even believe them yourself. When you are connected, then you know, then you want to go for it, then you want to give your totality. But that nobody can do for you. It has to come from yourself, this insight that I can only help myself. Yes, here you can get a lot of support for it, so it can go much quicker. Otherwise, it's almost impossible to heal thyself. And that's why I want you to do all these different sessions. Because then things, I know, it will start breaking that armor and your mind patterns. This China wall you have around yourself. In the breathing, I reconnected with the beautiful devotee's heart. Something I can feel from time to time, like an old memory from another life, is such a delicate space. It opens and then disappears again. Even though I have no clear memory of this time, the feeling is so familiar, being empty, becoming nobody, just to be at his service. When you fall into that emptiness, that silence of your own being, of your own heart, then there is always familiar. Like we just talked about, time and space disappear. So this is what I'm trying to get you slowly, slowly into those spaces where you go beyond your little idea of yourself, of your role in this life. You don't take it so serious. You're opening up to something bigger. What I feel in my neck, in the pain that is holding me back from this devotee's heart I once had. That is what is called the pain in the neck. They say that, the pain in the neck. Maybe this is where they come from. It holds you from experiencing bliss and consciousness. It's a pain in the neck. It is a pain in the neck. To get stuck in the ego is really a pain in the neck. That's why I say you have to lose your head. A fine cut. Your head gone. In India, they say that you come to the guru, what can you offer? They come offering flowers. What is flowers? Only thing is worth offering is your head. Please don't give me any bloody heads. But your mind, your old identification, that's what it means. Only somebody who have seen that, no, I'm tired. I want to become real. I want to learn. I'm not arrogant. I want to listen. Only then is it possible to give that teaching. And many of you have been in this situation before. This pain has been there for as long as I remember. And sometimes it comes very strong, like in that satsang in Brazil. Now I realize I was not scared from taking feedback. It is letting go and reconnecting with this heart that frightens me. My whole purpose of talking to you and giving you any feedback is to let go and reconnecting with your heart. So that's why it is that frightens me, because it's together. My talking and giving feedback, I have to find this way or that way, that something goes deeper, that you understand yourself, so you can start allowing this holding, allowing this let go that you are waiting for, that you are longing for. If the ego and the mind is too strong, then there's no opening, can't go in. It's like boing, 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 boing. Then there's no point to talk. Now I feel the opening, I can go in. It's like with children. They don't want the medicine, and then when they sit, then you put the little teaspoon. And then they say like, then they don't know that this is, you have to take that to get healthy. And then they start crying, and then they think, oh, you're my mama, but I hate you because you're giving me the strong medicine. That is the deal that the master has to go through. It's just to make you healthy, no? You say, I realize I was not scared from taking feedback. It's letting go. But the feedback is bringing you closer to this letting go. It's the same thing. Reconnecting with my heart that frightens me. This is the mystery. You are longing for it, and also it frightens you. Many years ago, someone read my star chart and said that I didn't come to this life to be a leader, but to follow. Oh. That's tough. At that moment, my mind got really pissed off with this idea. Yeah, I can understand. I mean, what's the point to be in life if you're not a leader? Like a Mussolini. But since I met you, I understand what it was about. These moments when I'm completely at your service are the ones I feel most total. You see, this is exactly the way how the ego functions, because the ego is totally separated from existence. So then it wants to become something special, want to be a leader. And it struggles to become powerful, to become a leader, to get known, to be a rock star, movie star. Let's go to Hollywood, be famous. And this is what is running the planet now. This stupidity. But as soon as you remember the moment when I'm completely at your service are the ones I feel more total, then you forget that because you're functioning out of your heart. Something touches you. Then it's not a struggle to turn your way away from the dreams, because it comes from the inside, it's your own understanding. But most of the people, they never feel this. I got deeply touched with the Krishna Das movie. I feel like I have lived this before, the death of my master. It touches me so deeply and brings out this devotee's heart. But why it frightens me so much to be in touch with this again? Maybe I got completely lost after his death. Maybe for lives. Yes, maybe. Then you went another way to try to fulfill yourself in other ways, in ego ways, in shallow ways, in desires. But you cannot run away from yourself. Now you're back again. You have to face yourself now and stop this foolishness. I can't see it clearly, but what I know is that to be close to you, my beloved, is healing the deepest scar in my soul. And I feel that slowly this heart is opening. And to be close to me, you can only be close to me when you have your own heart. Because only in trust, only in love, only in surrender can you be close. Otherwise you can sit very close, but you're very far away. There's nothing to do with physical closeness. It is in your own being that you are available. But to be with the Master is the deepest healing. And that's why Buddha says that it's the most fortunate thing that can happen to you, to get the Master. That is just half of the story. Second half is that you have to be a real disciple. Only then can you receive the Master. I'm longing once again to be nobody at your feet, melting in your love, so you don't visit my heart anymore from time to time, so you are there all the time. I am there all the time, but you are not. Don't put these things on me. It's another poop out. I know from my own experience, because my master is always with me. In fact, he moved in. And I love him so much that I will never say, leave me. When you love somebody, you always have your doors open, you're always longing for that, no? Even the lovers, they hear something, then they look out the window. Oh, is he coming now? Is he coming now? Like that. Then, if he comes and moves in, then how can I possibly thank you, Baba? It's beyond my love and gratitude, beyond any words I could write. From my heart, Sad. How you can thank me is just become more and more real, truthful. Let go of the shallowness. Go deeper. Be silent. And for God's sake, don't take it serious. Because you guys are too serious already. I have to all the time remind you, whatever. How is it, Mina? How is it going? Good? Summer in Norway, no? It's nice. Who cares when there is heat inside? Love is the funeral pyre. Love is the funeral pyre where I have laid my living body. All the false notions of myself that once caused pain and fear and confusion have turned into ash as I came closer to God. What has risen from this tangled web of thoughts now shines with jubilation through the eyes of angels. Love is the funeral pyre where the heart must lay its body. Dear Baba, Buddha said, if you have compassion, you have everything. Compassion is the ultimate liberation. Osho says, love comes and goes, but compassion is a love which once it comes, never goes. Is this your living reality? Did the final shift take place in the Himalayas when you saw those monkeys? Deep, deep gratitude and love, Pema Devi. Compassion is the living reality of any enlightened one. So when Buddha said, if you have compassion, you have everything. Compassion is the ultimate liberation. Because compassion means that you are free, you are not the slave of the passion. Most people are slaves of the passion, which is the deeper side of your mind. Then you are a slave. Compassion, it means now that restlessness, that poison, that wanting, craving, that has turned into something else. It has transformed itself. It's the same energy, but it's transformed into something higher. Then it becomes compassion. Ordinary people only knows about passion. Passion is very hot. Compassion is like the full moon. You can sit forever under it in awe. Osho says, love comes and goes, but compassion is a love which, once it comes, never goes. Yes, because how to put this into words? When I use the name love, it is the same as compassion. But in people's mind, it's different maybe. Because the love is not pure love. Love comes and goes. That is for the ordinary people. He's talking to the ordinary sleepy people. Love comes and goes. That is what you experience. But they're also saying that God is love. How can it come and go? It is the ultimate. Love is God. Love is consciousness. Then you talk from a different place of consciousness. So it depends who you are talking to. For the ordinary people, love comes and goes. But Compassion is a love which once it comes, never goes. It is a love. It is a purified love. It is a love with no dust in it, no impurities. That can only happen when yourself is transformed. This is only the living reality of somebody who is free from their craving. And that compassion for a Buddha, everything, he's only there for compassion. Because it's nothing he needs. He's just there to share. What could be more compassionate than that? To try to make people see that they have also this beautiful compassion, this freedom, this consciousness, this silence. What could be more compassionate? So, different Buddhas teach that in different ways. But remember, even when the Buddha is hitting you, it's out of compassion. So that means you have to let go of all your own ideas. The enlightened one is only there to help you. But it's so difficult for you to be receptive, to receive help. Because the mind always wants to protect itself, and the mind always wants to do it your own way. So it's a fight. Pull a little bit, give a little bit. Pull a little bit, give a little bit. Till you come to that stage where, no, I let go. So this compassion purified passions as such. Only the self-realized can have, because it's purified. Ego people, for not having a better world, which is most people where humans live, they think also, they also use this word compassion. You have to be compassionate. If you are a good Christian, if you are a good Buddhist, you have to be compassionate. Like a missionary, he should be compassionate and teach people in the jungle about Jesus Christ. And in that way, he fucks up their life. The poor, innocent Indian running around like a free being in the jungle, enjoying. Then it comes a stiff man in a suit and say, I will teach you real life about Jesus Christ, but first you have to get dressed and wear some shoes. This is how the Christians have corrupted almost everybody. Then fear. Because God is seeing you, is seeing your vena. Don't do that. Then they create guilt in that innocent man. So, in the Christian mind, he thinks he's very compassionate. He's spreading Jesus' teaching. Like in Mother Teresa. But that is not compassion, because it's you think, the ego thinks you are higher than them. It's an ego compassion, which is not compassion. But this is what the world knows as compassion. You have to be good. Is this what I call the goody-goody? You are helping out of the ego, but you are higher. Oh, poor wild man, you don't know about Jesus Christ. You will end up in hell. Come to my school and put on some nice clothes. Be civilized. That's how they have destroyed all the beautiful tribes from Australia to America to Brazil to even north of Norway. And the Christians, they forced them to learn a new language, to let go of the past, of their culture, of their identity, which is very gruesome. But they think, maybe in their Christian mind, that we are very compassionate. We are helping these people. This is the sad situation of the world. That many people think this is compassion. We are very compassionate. Missionary go into the jungle. That is the lowest. Then in love, then compassion gets transformed higher, because now love, real love, is from the heart. Then you feel the other. You are not higher, you start feeling in tune. Much more beautiful, because it's human. The first is not human, it's machine, it's the ego, which is what is normal. Love is almost forgotten. Then you will never, you have never anything to say. You listen to the other. In love, you listen to the other first. You want to feel. You want to get in tune. Then it's heart to heart. Then you can get compassionate because you feel the other. Spontaneous, you want to help. Is not out of the idea that I am higher, I'm Christian, I'm Buddhist, or I'm so and so. I'm rich, I can give. I have friends in New York, billionaire, and they built hospital and they were so proud. That hospital had their name on it. You think that is compassion? But they live in that world. I'm a very good man. I built the hospital. This is just pumping the ego up. Then the second stage is love, is human, which is almost unheard of. In this, it really sticks out when people have love, when they are spontaneous, they help. And sometimes it happens. Out of people, you see people have an accident and people stop and help. It's in the moment. Or when there is a disaster, that tsunami in Japan, an earthquake, then people get, they wake up because life is very fragile. Then a real love comes. You want to help. You feel compassion for your other people. You don't have anything anymore. Then you become very human. I have been sometimes in my life in these disaster areas. And I always thought it was so beautiful. Because people got so human. And they took strangers into their house and they gave them food and shelter. They are not protective anymore. That's how we should be. We shouldn't need a disaster to become human. But this is how it is. We need shocks. Like the master has to give you shocks to wake you up. It's out of compassion. But how can the master get you to wake up? You're so asleep. He has to try this way and that way and this way. So maybe sometimes it doesn't even look like compassion. But remember, everything he's doing is out of compassion because he doesn't want anything. And he always has to find new ways. Like in the beginning, when the Christian, the European came to Japan, they couldn't understand that Zen Buddhism and Zen was a religion. Had that anything to do with spirituality? They didn't understand. There is not even any God. And there are stories that when the disciple is coming, the master hits him or throws him out the window. They can't understand it because they are locked in their own way of thinking. They have no idea how it is to be with the master. The poor master has to try everything. Even that effort to throw you out the window. An enlightened person is not interested in that. He's doing it because maybe you will wake up and stop asking stupid questions and go in. Many times when I say something, I know it's a gamble. Maybe you get hurt, maybe you wake up. And with some people, if they are very dense, then maybe they leave. But that's the risk a master has to take, because now it's now or never. Either you start waking up, or it's good that you leave anyway, because you're not ready to look at yourself. So it's a balance. But it's always out of compassion. Because you want to give something, they have to be available, no? And the greatest gift, Buddha says, comes from the Buddhas. What can be more precious than to wake up to your own divine nature? So it's a very funny business, a business of isness. Did this final shift take place in the Himalayas when you saw those monkeys? I don't know. Because I don't see it as... It goes on and on and on. The final shift from mind to no mind, or from identification with somebody, had already gone. But even self-realization, the mind is still there because it has been with you for a long time. So in the beginning is such a shock. Such a shock that you don't know how even to function. For months, I was sitting just on my balcony. It was difficult even to go and buy bread. It's very strange when you are not identified with the mind. You are always, it's always been there and it's gone. So that's why for many people, I think for most people who have gone through that transformation, it will take time to learn how to function. Learn how to function without being identified with the mind. Learn how to function out of yourself. That takes time. Osho didn't start talking about it at least for 15 years. He was maturing in it. And I know about fools who say, oh, yesterday I got enlightened. Now I want to start giving satsang. Like it's an in thing. They have no idea. And it's so new that you can have nothing to compare it to. So, it takes long time to readjust. And not only that, but also the physical body went through a big turmoil and sicknesses. And I think that is a way to purify itself. So I knew something was happening, but in my mind, I had no idea about enlightenment, because for me, it was the master who was enlightened. I never thought, I never had any desire to get enlightened. Then other people start telling me, what happened to you? Some even said, you look enlightened. Some of my Indian friends in the ashram, what happened? And I felt so much energy was going through me in the beginning, and you are not adjusted to it. So it's almost like you have too much voltage. And I was sitting for months with my eyes closed, because when I looked, it was like a laser. So I was almost afraid to show that. I wanted to hide it. It was too much. So I can totally understand people who goes totally away, which I also tried to do. I moved to the Himalayas. I just want to enjoy now. But then it was something else that said, no, not in this life. So enlightenment is one thing. Many people are enlightened, but to teach, to talk about these things, that's another story. That is much more difficult. And my master had already left the body, so I had nobody to lean to except my master was there, but as a presence. And he was always there. He was the only one who was there, in fact. And nobody in the ashram understood. In fact, they misunderstood. Then I got a call from some Indian friends who said, no, we have a beautiful guest in Bombay. And it had been a big earthquake, a disaster area. But remember, many good things can come out of disaster. So one very pure soul, one enlightened man, young man, they had rescued up there in the Himalaya from the earthquake and brought him to Bombay. And then they called me and they said, no, we have a beautiful guest, you have to come and visit. And I wasn't even interested to go anywhere. I was totally fulfilled in myself. But then I knew that connection from those people, they really wanted me to go. And then another friend came who also they had contacted. And he said, I will help you, I will buy the train ticket and take care of you. And all that, because I was also very fragile. Then when I came to Bombay and I met this guy, then things start falling more into place. So you need also somebody to reflect what you have. In fact, he invited me to move into his apartment. And it was only one bedroom in that apartment. And he said, there's enough space for both of us. We could live happily ever after that. But then we had a deep longing for the Himalaya. We were both lovers of Himalaya, so we started talking about Himalaya. And I had to go back to America to finish. That was the last thing for me. I had to go and pack up. And then we made a plan. We will meet in the Himalayas in a few months. In the spring, when you can go there, because now it's snow. This was in January. And by June, I was back again. And there was no cell phone, so I didn't know where. We had written a few letters to each other. And it was terrible for me to be back in America. That was really bad, because there's no, this energy, this of enlightenment of India is totally nil there. It was super dry. Dead dry. One alive human being walking around with the zombies. And I was not used to it. So I was longing to go back. I was in bliss, but I knew America was finished. Then I heard from somebody else, there is one crazy master in Lucknow called Punjaji, Papaji. You have to come there. And then I knew that this guy is something, I have to go there and visit. So I came to Delhi, then I went first to visit him. And then when I came in, the first satsang, he took me home. The first satsang, he took me into his house. Next day, he invited me for lunch. Then he recognized this, which was very helpful also. And he said, no, you have to teach this. You are very lucky, such a young, strong man. No, you go and teach this. And I said, I live here in India, I said. Because he said, go to your countries and teach. And I said, I live here. If anything, I will bring people to you. So this takes time. It was an integration with great help from other enlightened people also to make it. Some old lines like Papaji, who had had it for a long time. So that's how existence takes care. So it was step by step. And he said, you are so lucky. No, you have married someone that will never leave you. Your own self. Like that. And this Papaji, he even came to Manali and lived with me there, visit there. Some years later, that's how it goes. Then, it was still a few years later, this story with these monkeys, and it was not in the Himalayas. It is a beautiful place in the heart of India called Panchmari, very beautiful and unspoiled even today, where you have even tigers there and leopard and all kinds of wild animals. And is older than the Himalayas. It's a very ancient place, many sages and yogis and enlightened beings have been there throughout time. So this place is where I fell asleep on this rock, and then when I opened my eyes, then it was these little baby monkeys with the mothers just in front of me, just 1 or 2 meters in front of me. I was so peaceful that I didn't disturb anything. So they had come around, maybe just the energy, I don't know. But when I woke up and I saw that, it was something that really I realized, I'm in the Garden of Eden. I'm in paradise. So in a way, all the last thing happens, and something happened then. And that's how quiet it is all the time. Just as those little monkey babies, so innocent. It was innocence meeting innocence. And they weren't scared at all. They'd never seen humans before. At that time also, it was another enlightened friend there who I met in Bombay, I told you. He was there also, but then everything was finished. After that, there was no need to see anybody because everything was integrated in a way. And after that, even Papaji came to me. I didn't need to go anywhere. Even the master came to me. That was too much also. It's all too much. It's all compassion. It's all grace. It's all love. Is all beauty, is all peace. Many stories I could tell you, but you must be getting too cold now, so we can't go on. then I forgot to tell you about the compassion of the Buddhas. No? First the unconscious man, the normal man, then the humans, you know, love, the heart, and then the Buddha, that is just compassion. In love, you feel the other. In real compassion of the Buddha, then you become the other. There is no separation, there is a oneness. So, that's how it is for the Buddha, because they know humanity, they know the suffering, the pain of humans, because they have gone through it. But how to lift them up? That is compassion. They feel the pain because they can feel the others. They become like they feel, because there's no separation. But how to help them? How to help them get out of their suffering? That is the whole work of the Master, of the Guru, of the Buddhas, in different ways. How? They know what humanity, what man is longing for, but how to give that? How to end the suffering? So in so many ways, they're only trying to uplift, to go above themselves, the little self. That is compassion. Now we can go on. Never let anything hang there. Finish it. Be total.
Atonka Satyam, Siri Vaheguru.